In this episode of From Bench to Fireside, Pisces Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. John Connolly, chats with Dr. Klebanoff, a Pisces Network investigator, about his background, experience, and research focus in cellular immunology and medical oncology. T-cell immunology plays a pivotal role in unleashing potent anti-tumor immune responses. Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy, or PICE, scientists like Dr. Chris Klebanoff from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center are studying how to optimize T-cell activation, trafficking, persistence, and function within the tumor microenvironment. Get ready to go from bench to fireside to learn more about Dr. Klebanoff's take on the importance of collaboration, innovation, and a multidisciplinary approach to advancing cancer immunotherapy.
I'm John Connolly, and I'm here with Dr. Chris Klebanoff.
Chris is a cellular immunologist and medical oncologist. He's got over 20 years of experience with some of the top labs in cell therapy, not just his remarkable clinical career as a Parker Institute investigator out of a wonderful Howard Hughes research lab as an assistant clinical investigator at the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. He also, his research focus has very much been around T-cell immunology and really was one of the true pioneers in the field in really setting up the concept that T-cell subsets with memory-like attributes can self-renew and are multipotent, and that this essential aspect of these cells is critical for our anti-tumor immune responses. And so this really, this is something that has both set us up for a better understanding of the critical quality attributes of these cells and how the immune system can really be used to repurpose and attack cancer, but also led then to later clinical changes on how we resolve aspects of clinical practice like lymphodepletion. Really, this is something that has really changed the way that we think about cell therapy moving forward. And then Chris is then, of course, moved on to his own lab, which very much focuses on applying the knowledge that his lab has generated and his career has generated to actually helping patients in the clinic. So, Chris, I just want to take a second and just welcome you to this interview.
Oh, it's great to be here, John.
So Chris, just taking a step back now, I think for everybody, tell me a little bit about your current role at Memorial and your goal and your mission really to help patients.
Yeah, so I'm a practicing physician scientist. Over time, that gets a little bit more scientist, less physician, but I still have a half a day clinic every week where I see patients in the context of early phase clinical trials and in particular cell and gene therapy trials. And then I also serve as an attending physician on our recently formulated cell therapy service. So clinically, I'm always looking to how we can bring innovative therapies that are being developed in the laboratory and bring them to patients in need. And I think going along those lines, the focus of my lab and really my great passion is to build upon the incredible progress the field has made. So since 2017, just a few years ago, we have not one, but six different autologous cell and gene therapies that are approved for the treatment of cancer, which as a physician and a scientist just blows my mind, because we live in a world where a physician can write a prescription for autologous cell and gene therapy. But the honest reality is that despite great progress, all of these current approvals are in cancers that started from a transformed B cell. So in aggregate, this is at most 5% of all human cancer. So it's a not insignificant proportion of patients. But that leaves 91% of patients who have cancer that starts in a solid organ, unaddressed by current cell therapies. And importantly, other more sort of routine forms of immunotherapies like immune checkpoint inhibitors are really disproportionately not benefiting the vast majority of those solid tumor patients as well. So the main focus of my lab, my main passion, is how can we bring the power of cell therapy to patients with common solid cancers?
Chris, you've been throughout your career, really been around some incredible scientists and clinicians and have been really done amazing work. Is there anything or anyone that's guided you toward immunotherapy in particular when you start to think about the different approaches that are out there?
So I have benefited from so many outstanding mentors, both formal mentors, as well as especially through the Parker Institute, what I would regard as many close colleagues and informal mentors. But two foundational mentors for me which very much are chocolate and peanut butter in cancer immunology, is Steven Rosenberg, who's the great physician scientist pioneer. I think the word maverick is also appropriate. And Nick Restifo, who is also a physician scientist and just a wildly creative and thoughtful and spirited individual. And so what I learned from Steve when I first joined his branch in 2002 was just having an absolute line of sight to bringing laboratory innovation to patients and to do so as efficiently and with a line of sight to bringing therapies to patients as quickly as possible. And from Nick, just completely out of the box, free thinking, let's just completely shake up what the textbooks say, and let's really approach basic problems in cancer immunity with creativity and with rigor.
What is it that you're really excited about that's out there? We've got so many changes, both in the scientific field, but also in clinical practice, a lot of insight that's coming from our clinical trials. What is it that you're seeing in the next maybe year to 3 years that you think is going to really get you excited?
So my great passion and focus right now, which is really what I just all my heart deeply believe in, is finding outstanding, as perfect as possible immunologic targets to bring the power of T cells to recognize those targets. And what, after a lot of thinking, have coalesced, and it's grateful to see that other investigators in the Parker Institute are arriving at very similar conclusions, is can we target immunologic epitopes that result from recurrently mutated driver oncogenes? And the rationale is severalfold. One is that by definition, a driver actually contributes to making a cancer cell a lethal cancer cell. So if you target these, it's very challenging for a cancer cell to lose expression of a driver and therefore the target and still be a lethal problematic disease. The second is that driver oncogenes tend to recur in very tightly constrained hotspot positions. So that means that if you can develop a therapy against these, it's easier to scale. It's easier to have a more off-the-shelf therapy rather than an entirely bespoke therapy targeting what we've termed a private or personalized neoantigen. And finally, it represents just an extraordinary research tool. So I think one of the challenges in human cancer immunology and translational immunology is it's still a little bit of a black box in terms of what's the ultimate end effector, what's the ultimate target antigen. You give an immune checkpoint inhibitor, you give a cytokine, you give an oncolytic virus, and you hope you see a response, and you try to triangulate what are the effectors, what are they recognizing, and how might a cancer cell lose or acquire resistance to these targets. So if the antigen is known and shared among individuals, it really becomes an extraordinary research tool to understand, because you know the effector, you know the target, and you can measure response and potentially mechanisms of resistance.
And so, Chris, picking up on that concept of mechanisms of resistance, right? One of the, I guess, the challenges that are in front of you is very much this idea that if you're targeting just a single mutation, a single driver antigen behind that tumor, that there's opportunities for other tumors to evolve around that, or actually you're forcing the immunoselection of tumors that can escape your pressure. And this is true for all therapies. When are we going to see in the T cell receptor space a combinatorial T cell product that's really coming back and targeting multiple things? So much like combination chemotherapy, we're just taking that next step forward.
Yeah, the challenge, of course, is combinatorial therapies, especially in cell therapy, represents combinatorial complexity. So that's not something that we should shy away from. I think we need to embrace potency, but it introduces complexity. So I think one potential approach, and there are many, but one potential approach is to exploit and take advantage of a completely orthogonal mechanism of T-cell engagement with cancer antigens. And that is to use the CD4 positive T-cells, or so-called class two restricted responses, and see, is there a way, let's not just target different class one restricted epitopes with different TCRs or different vaccine formulations, but can we recruit CD8s and CD4s to target the cancer cell at the same time?
I love that. So it's really looking at this as an immunologist, looking at a system and not just like a drug developer where it's one drug, one target, let's move forward. I think that's going to be really essential. And again, taking a step back to where you're at now. So at MSK, long history of immunotherapy there. So it's just really been a centerpiece and a hotbed for immunotherapy throughout the years. How is the environment there at Memorial supporting you and supporting these efforts that you have? And could you tell us a little bit more about the center there, Pisces Center there?
Absolutely. So first, to talk about MSK and to talk about cancer immunology, one has to make mention of the OG of physician scientists, which is William Coley. And so for those who have not heard the mythology, let me just briefly summarize the mythology of William Coley. So William Coley was one of the first attending physicians. He was a surgical scientist, beginning his career in the late 1890s at what at the time was New York Cancer Hospital, subsequently has become Memorial Sloan Kettering. And he very early on lost a patient with a very aggressive sarcoma shortly after amputating this young lady's hand, which was standard of care then, even to this day. But despite this just very gruesome, heroic operation, the patient passed away within about 10 weeks after this amputation. And he was so distraught by losing this young lady that he perused the medical records here at what would later become Memorial Sloan Kettering and found case series of patients who also had sarcomas, but developed wound infections or skin infections, and then had what otherwise appeared to be a spontaneous regression of an otherwise incurable disease. And in point of fact, he found an example of one such patient, a German immigrant who was living at the time, as many immigrants were back in that day in the Lower East Side, and years later found that this one patient who had an otherwise incurable sarcoma, developed a wound infection, was still alive. And this led him to hypothesize that if you can rationally manipulate the immune system, and his strategy at that time was to intentionally introduce a bacterial infection into patients with sarcoma, that might awaken the immune system and trigger cancer aggression. And so that sort of line of sight and being at the patient's bedside, seeing where there are problems, and then putting that into clinical practice is really part of this institution's DNA. So fast forward into the early 2000s, the chair of immunology, Nobel laureate Jim Allison, who had a wonderful translational partnership with another outstanding physician scientist, Jed Wolchuk. So Jim, again, for those who perhaps are not fully indoctrinated with the lore, was and is a maverick in his own right and discovered a molecule called CTLA-4 that seemed to be the yang of a co-stimulatory molecule called CD28. And over Christmas in the late 90s, saw early experimental evidence that if you disrupt CTLA-4, it could cause cancer regression in mice. Fast forward about 6 or 7 years later, and in collaboration with Jed, began testing this therapy in patients with cancer, especially with melanoma, and started to see cancer regression in patients who otherwise had 6 months to live, which was the median survival for patients with metastatic melanoma at that time, but also just very unique and interesting experimentally. I think as a clinician, it's challenging, but scientifically extremely interesting side effects that were never seen before with cancer therapies, including inflammation of the colon, inflammation of various endocrine glands like the thyroid, and lung inflammation. And I think in one foul swoop, this just demonstrated, you know, how powerful the immune system can be, but also what great stewards we must be as we try to manipulate the immune system as a cancer treatment. And sorry to keep on going, but our history is so rich. Jim and Jed are introducing anti-CTLA-4 antibodies into patients for the very first time. An investigational new drug application, an IND, was approved to begin treating the very, very first patients in the world with a second generation CAR targeting CD19, an effort that was pioneered by Michel Sadelain and Rainier Brentjens. And of course, for cell therapists, the rest is history. So that's the framework in which I've moved my lab.
This is spectacular. You really are at the heart of not just the history of immunotherapy, but really what we think is the future. And so when it comes to that, this is something that the Parker Institute and the entire Pisces family is tremendously interested in, is really developing the futures of immunotherapy, pushing this forward and building a network that's truly focused on making all cancers curable disease. How do you think Pisces facilitated your career? And what is it that you think you could do now that you couldn't have done without?
The focus of my efforts, so we've talked about a lot of the early success using antibody-based therapy. So antibodies that disrupt immune checkpoint inhibitors, or repurposing the binding domain of an antibody into and reformulating as a chimeric antigen receptor. So there is another class of immune receptors, which really have been known for many decades now, but have been comparatively underutilized, which is the T cell receptor, the naturally somatically arranged antigen binding receptor that is on all T cells. To target intracellular antigens, which includes recurrently mutated drivers, which includes personalized patient-specific neoantigens, you can't target those with antibodies. You need an immune receptor that can physically look inside of another cell, which is the TCR. And the space of investigators who are interested in TCR therapeutics and using that as a tool to treat cancer is a very historically been a very narrow swath among all cancer immunologists. So one of the great joys and what really has advanced my work in joining the PiSEE Institute to come into contact and befriend and be mentored by the likes of Chris Garcia, who was the first individual to actually see the three-dimensional shape of a T-cell receptor and how it binds its antigen, and has just made unbelievable discoveries and understanding, you know, what drives specificity and cross-reactivity of T-cell receptors. Chris, on the one hand, and Phil Greenberg, who along with Dr. Rosenberg is the other cancer immunology OGs who has long believed that the future of how we address common solid cancers, in addition to liquid cancers, is with the TCR. And by just being able to come together with scientifically and clinically like-minded individuals and to talk through problems and to talk through possibilities has been just extraordinary.
That's fantastic, Chris. And as you apply your discoveries and the discoveries that you really think out with the network, I think one of the strengths that we've seen is reviewing the data. So one of the things that as your clinical trials are going is getting those data out to the network and engaging people like CD4 experts or NK cell experts or to start to talk about the combination biology that could really lead to the next cancer care. So it's fantastic to hear you say that. So the other key question that I really do have is about what is it that has been your experience in terms of the organization? So one of the PiSEE itself, one of the things that sets it apart is our ability twice a year to get together as a network and really begin to dig deep into this. So with regards to things like the retreats, what is your experience there? And has this been something that you've utilized to forge those relationships?
The conclusion that I've reached after COVID, I think everyone has essentially reached the same conclusion, which is just nothing beats physically coming together, sharing a meal, looking at data in person, and just having that free exchange of ideas in a totally unfettered way. And the fact that we do that as an institute, not once a year, which is true for something like ACR or these large meetings, but to come together twice a year, which I think is actually relatively frequent, and to do so in a way that is in an intimate format where just conversation, discussion, and review of data, just it really just happens completely organically, is just, I think, the secret sauce of the Institute.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the other aspects I think that I'd love to see, particularly with you're such a successful clinician scientist, but you mentioned Chris Garcia and others that are really equally passionate about just the fundamentals of molecular interaction and the ability to connect someone that is day and night thinking about how T cells engage, how they hook, with someone that's going to take that and really truly apply that to the clinic and iterate back as a team is incredible. And it's wonderful to have you as part of that team and as really a leader at the Parker Institute.
Oh, thanks, John. Yeah, no, sure. It's been a dream come true. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, that's great. Thanks very much. I think, is there anything else you'd like to say about PiSEE or the collaborative network or anything else we should know that's out there? We covered a lot and it's really been a spectacular discussion.
Yeah, just to say in my short career, it's very clear that the path forward is really in the spirit of what are the key values of the PiSEE Institute, which is the problem of cancer is so complex that it really requires a team effort of groups with just very shared common goals, but different and complementary expertise to come together to do so in a way that is free of ego and unbounded by sort of collaboration and innovation. that really, that is the only way to move forward and to move forward quickly.
It's fantastic to have you part of it, Chris. Thank you very much. And thanks for your time today.
Yeah, my great pleasure, John. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to From Bench to Fireside. And special thanks to this season's PICE Network contributors from Dana-Farber, UCSF, Stanford Medicine, Mount Sinai, UCLA, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and Weill Cornell Medicine. To donate to support PICE's mission, please visit parkerici.org/donate. You can find From Bench to Fireside on Spotify. To be notified of new episodes, like or subscribe to our channel. For the latest at the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy, follow us on X and LinkedIn at ParkerICI or visit www.parkerici.org to learn how we aim to accelerate the development of breakthrough immune therapies to turn all cancers into curable diseases. From Bench to Fireside is produced by the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy. All content and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the Parker Institute. From Bench to Fireside is a trademark of the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy. We'll see you next time as Parker Network experts in immunotherapy take you from behind the lab bench to the frontiers of cancer research.